Good to see you tonight. We're going to try to make it through the rest of 45 and 46 tonight, if we can get by press and the priest. And Sunday, Doug won't be here, and we'll go through 47. And then I won't be here Wednesday, and we'll go through 48. That'd be the last of Ezekiel, if we on schedule. And then a week from this Sunday, we'll start, and you and Dale will start Proverbs parables with us. Dale's hair, what few he's got left, turned white on him. Yeah. So we'll try to get through this tonight if we can. If we can't, we'll finish up Sunday. And then Doug will finish up next, a week from this coming Wednesday. At this point in his vision, Ezekiel, of the new temple, Ezekiel sets forth some regulation pertaining to, and most of them is in 45 and 46, the rights and duties of the prince. And that's where we was at last time. Ann asked the questions about the prince and what they do. Talked to her a little bit after class, so she wants to go ahead and tell us about it. You don't ask a question without knowing the answer. And I know she knows the answer. She knows she can ask her husband next door to her. I got a little bit to say about it myself, but I'll let anybody say anything they want to say about it. Well, that's the first thing we're going to talk about. And then we're going to talk about the festival offerings. And then we're in chapter 45 right now, still in 45. Seemed like every time they had something special going on, they had some kind of offering and done something back in the days. We spent a lot of time in the 48th chapter, no, the 45th chapter, about their weight and measurements and everything. And I'm not going to go through that. I think I told Dale it's different than our measurements, but it's just hard to understand. It's hard for me to do anything with it. So I'm not going to do that. If you have anything you want to say about that, you can. We're going to talk about, again in verse chapter 46, we'll talk about the offering on the Sabbath and the new moon. And the entrance and exit of the worships in 8 and 10. The offering of the prince on behalf of the people. And the inheritance of the prince. And the preparation of sacrifice of the meal. When I was getting this down, I glanced back and I put in 45:5, this verse caught my eye there. The Levites are called ministers of the house. And right here with Ezekiel, a lot of times he says, he's talking to about the temple there. In contrast to the priest was the ministers unto the Lord. And I think we understand that that hasn't gone any place. In 45, and where was that the last time? I'll say this. Much of this is figurative language, and it made to the kingdom of Christ. And I think, and do that, and I got a drawing coming up after this that Doug sent to me on my iPhone. Since then, I've seen it in 2-3 pages of the material that I have. All Christians are kings or princes, and priests under the gospel dispensation. So we're all here tonight. We are princes and priests, if I understand it right. And Revelation 1 and 6 and 5 and 10 backs that up. We are spiritual and we are secular, but our core spiritual value guides us in secular matters. In other words, we're spiritual people. We're to be like God, holy, just, and righteousness controls our lives. The prince in chapter 7, 45 and 7, and 46 and 22 is Christ. I'm not going to be so dogmatic and says it couldn't refer to King, because I have another statement down here or some of the leading men. But I believe that if you look at it in a spiritual sense, that's what we're talking about, is Christ. Also in chapter 34 and 24 and 37 and 25. It's talking about Christ. Figurative language talking about the church and the stage of the kingdom. Is that the only thing it's talking about? Well, I don't know where it is or not, but you can add to whatever you want to. This strip which is for the prince, which could mean the man in a leading position before the people. And we'll see the drawing on that later on. I'll just pause for a minute in case anybody's got anything they want to add to that. This is what it looks like to me. Okay. The Lord predicted that his people would not be oppressed by this class of head men after the return from captivity. So I don't want to spend so much time trying to identify the prince and forget about the context that he's in. If you read that, you have to come away with the idea that God wasn't happy with these leaders, because they oppress the people. And so a lot of my lessons on that regard, they took advantage of them. And he says, we're not going to do that. And they oppress the class of the, and so the men, after return from captivity, he doesn't want this being going on. The warning and admonition was to chastise the wicked head men. We're talking about the prince. You're looking at me kind of funny there, Rosie. All right. She's shaking her head no. So that means I keep on going. Edmund, the past wrongdoing, and commanding them about their conduct in the future. So he spends a lot of time there. We might not be in agreement who they are, but they're leaders. And if you look at it in a spiritual sense, it's definitely Christ and his kingdom. But one of the main points that he's trying to get across here, in the future, when you come out of a Babylon captivities, we're not going to have the leaders running shot over my people. That is definitely taught in these few verses here. It's ironic. I was dealing with somebody who was talking about, how you know God is true? How you know the Bible is true? Something to that effect. So I said, well, we're studying Ezekiel. Babylon was a great empire. Vast city. And I think it's Isaiah, the one that prophesied that they will be brought down to nothing. And I'm not sure, but I think it's the 53rd chapter where Babylon is nothing. But Isaiah came along and said, there's going to be a man by the name of Cyrus, that's going to come and take over. And that's just exactly what happened then. And he done that, and this was probably 200 years before it happened. That's how you know there is a God. That's how you know the Bible is true. When you tell about things that's going to be happening that far ahead of time. And I think it's same thing. You remember, I'm trying to think of Nineveh? Was that the name of the town? That Zephaniah said it wouldn't exist. It was a big major power too. And the Medes and the Persians came in there and wiped them out also before they dissolved. And said it'd be laying waste as a desert. And Zephaniah, I think the first chapter about verse 2 says, God's one that told me all this, that it's going to happen. I forgot how many years that was told before it happened, but it's happening. We can see it now. And that's where Romans says that the old is for our learning, and we can see things that. And so if you want to, I'm working on some material at home. If you want to to prove that there is a God and that He exists, that the Bible is true and that He exists, just look and see what it says and how far and how many years in advance that it says. And now the time we live in, it, we can see that it's all true. It's come about. It's happening. It has happened. To me, that shows the Bible is true. That shows me that God is true. There has to be a supreme being somewhere that can prophesy all of this. Here's a picture that Doug sent me on that. I was going to get my... I'm going to go and have new batteries put in that little flash thing, but I don't know where it is at this time. But somebody needs to go look at my grandson. He's got sticky fingers like that. He's probably got it right there in the classroom now. I was talking about the one that has a little red marker on it, but I don't know where it is. But I was telling Doug I was going to put it in my pocket and take it with me and stop at battery plus and have a new battery put in. But if you can see this, you can see it better than I can see on my computer. You have the portion there in the middle that says Judah and all the other tribes up there and Benjamin and the other tribe down here. You have the portion for the Levites. The Levites, when I look at this, are really the servant or the workers. So they took care of things. The sanctuary where the priests and the priest portion was there. The priest portion was there in the sanctuary. And they're the one that was the closest to the altar. The prince, we're going to find out later on this thing. All this material brought in, they was in charge of it. And as they needed sacrifices throughout the year, well, the prince was to provide this and have it. And that's the reason the measurements comes in. It'd be so exact, see? So if they have an offering, they have to do it. The prince has already got the material set by that they do it, and they would offer it, and the priest would be there next to the altar doing that. You find the city land or the city food. That's where they got the food at. And so this is the territory. If you can see on the left-hand side, it's got the Mediterranean Sea. On the right-hand side, you got the River of Jordan. But you got the prince there in their territory. God, in this next two chapters, takes care of everybody. He takes care of everybody. He sees to everybody that we're going to see that the prince later on can give to their children. And we're going to see that even in the Israel, the outside of people that they have, the people that was with them, they're going to be given an allotted amount too. So God is pretty strict in this, that everybody have their share, take care of. That's one reason the leaders shouldn't be able to run shod over anybody, because they're going to be well kept care of. God's going to see that they're kept care of, so they don't have a need to run shod over somebody else. And that's one thing. And they're going to have true measurements. They won't be able to cheat so easy or anything like that. Are you with me? Or have I put you all asleep earlier? Sir? He takes a little bit of time right here, and he said, it's not going to be this way in the spiritual kingdom that I'm going to stand. You know, you want to serve with God. You want to be with God. God is holy. God is righteous. So we're going to have to be holy and righteous in order to do that. God appears to the future rulers of his people to abandon the greed and corruption of their predecessor, of the ones before them who did violence in to the helpless and took spoils of them. There's always those who are strong and run over the weak by means of unjust measure. Well, if they're doing this by unjust measure, what are you going to do? We're going to have a new standard of measurement. And everybody's going to have the same, and they're going to be accurate like they're supposed to be. I don't have time to spend a lot in that, but if you want to talk about any of them, we can. The future leaders must eliminate measures that took advantage of the people. And this is one way to do it. Have one good standard measurement. The prince of the future would not confiscate the land. Well, you got that 5 acres bottom land. I want it. I'm going to go take it. No, you won't be able to do that. They would respect them. Everyone. These princes would be God-fearing men, and would have support for their own needs. So you take a person who doesn't have a need for anything, that takes away a lot of the trouble that he would try to go get other. Therefore, they would have neither the need nor the desire to wrong the people of God. So God says, I'm going to take care of everybody. And that way, even the strong be taken care of, the weak be taken care of. That way they won't have no excuse to run and shot over somebody. There's probably a lot more there than that, but I get that much out of it. So some of the regulation concerning worship. The reason for the concern about the weight and the measurement appears in verse 13 of the 4th, 5th chapter. People are to present offerings to their prince. They obey him there. The prince's responsibility, or the leader, whoever's in charge there, is responsible. He, in turn, has the responsibility of supplying the need of the temple service throughout the whole year. If they have something for sacrifice, then that's his responsibility to go do that. The prince has the responsibility of collecting the temple offering from the people. He also provided the communal sacrifice offered throughout all the year, as well as those special sacrifice offers on the festival days. So if we have a festival day, he has already got material, and he brings it in and puts it on, turns it over to him. That's one of the duties, one of the primary duties of the prince. God appears to the future rulers of his people to abandon the greed and corruption of the predecessors, the ones that was before him, who did violence in to the helpless and took spoil of them, took whatever they could get. God said, it won't be that way no more. We rule in justice and righteousness. Matter of fact, we live in justice and righteousness because we serve a justice and righteous leader. The prince had the responsibility of the offering and provided sacrifice of offering throughout the whole year. So he had to be a pretty good, honest, sincere man to do this. He was in charge of a lot of things. One of the points of the entire book of Ezekiel is that it was written after Ezekiel was taken to Babylon at the time of Jehoiachin's captivity, when he was captured. Ezekiel went into bondage there in Babylon too. The first part of the book consists to a great extent of chastisement of the Israel for their corruption and committed by the nation. So if you remember the way we read this, God is on to them. One reason you're here is because you was a corrupt people. You was idolater worship, and you cheated, and you done everything. We have one place where their sins was listed there, and so he spends the first. The last few verses concerning the prediction is the release of Israel when they come back from Babylon, the captivity, and the rebuilding of the ordinance of the law that has gone down in ruins. But Israel was not to lose heart because of their sad state of affairs. We mentioned over and over and over and over. We can see why they was in bad shape. They lost everything they had. They didn't have nothing. And to believe that God's going to return to them and bring all this back, yeah, that's what he's going to do. All he asked for them to repent and come back to him. But Israel was not to lose heart because of their sad state affair. This is the second part of Ezekiel where he spends a lot of time. He spends a lot of time. He's concerned about this. And God is concerned about this. And God is talking to Ezekiel. Provision of God for the children of men requires the finest of a picture to represent them to the human understanding. Just like in the book of Revelation. For humans to understand all that figurative language is picture some of the finest there is. Well, we see a little bit of that in Ezekiel too. Provision of God for the children of men require the finest that is, and he tries to show that. So not only could they understand it, but they could expect it. The last verse would indicate the general greatness of the favor of God. So we're getting down to the latter few verses, and the mercy and the favor of God really comes out. What's one way it comes out? The Gentiles are going to be coming in. and they're going to be in with the Jews. And all the blessings that the Jews have enjoyed, now the Gentiles are going to be coming in too. And I think he brings that out. Well, if we look at 46th chapter, and we don't have too much time, but I'm going to try to get through it so we can get through 47 Sunday. Then leave Doug 48, and he don't have to blame me for adding too much material. The Sabbath and the new moon. On the Sabbath day and then on the new moon, the first day of the month, the gates of the inner court was to be open. I don't know what that means, but it means that the Lord's business is going on if the gates is open. To me, it does. And that's what instruction we have there in the first verse of before the Sabbath, the Sabbath day and the new moon, and you have the gates open to the inner court there, and that shows that God is about His business. He's going about His business, and this is one of the thoughts I think He wants to give away to us. The prince will be required to make offerings for the Lord's service. And the priest will be the one to preside at the altar. They said, what's the difference between the two? That's what I see. Is there any more? Yeah, there might be some more, but I see that much different. The prince will be required to make the offering because they had everything that was the children of Israel gave them to offer. And the priest will be the one who presides at the altar with the sacrifice that the prince gives them. Now, if that's kind of confusing to you, I'm sorry, that's the best I can explain it.
Well, Charles, yes. It comes back, I think, to the fact that the prince came from a different tribe. The prince came from the tribe of Judah. And, you know, if the prince is representing Christ, Christ came from the tribe of Judah. And as a member of the tribe of Judah, he could go into the temple area, but there was
not as a priest could,
he could
he? Both. Yeah. And so what we have two different positions, and we have really two functions, what I'm trying to say here, or show you here. Okay? All were required to contribute to the work. Now, the prince had everything that was given there, and they was in charge of keeping up with it. But everybody was to contribute. All the children of Israel, if I understand this right, was to contribute to the work, and the prince will watch it. Gates is not, this really, I put this in here because I got confused about this. The gate is not to be confused with the eastern gates of the outer court, which was never to be opened. You remember back in the 44th? It's not talking about that. Okay? The Lord was... And this is another thing that comes out of my mind here. The Lord was particular about some apparently incidental matters when you look at that. He was really insistent on it. Sometimes we think, well, we can do this, we can do that. No, the Lord, one thing that comes out here, the prince was to be by the gate by which he should enter and leave the building. The Lord was insisting on some what we would say incidental things, but he said, no, this is the way it is. He's God. He calls the shots. Having spoken of the offering that the prince might give to God, then the announcement is made about gifts which the prince might make to others. In verse 46, the gift of prophecy given by the prince to his son was to be regarded as possession or inheritance. That means he didn't have to give it back. He had that right, God's saying, if I understand the right. That property would not revert to the original owner in the year of Jubilee. However, royal property given to a servant, to one of his servants, was to be revert back to the prince in the year of liberty. That's the way I read it. Unless you come up with a better thing. Which occurs every 15th year. Moreover, the new era, the prince was to respect the property rights of the subject. They didn't do it before they went into Babylon. But when he comes back out, they will. And we do that in the church too. Confiscation of property by the crown. As in the case of Naboth, you remember the vineyard? In 1 Kings 21, it won't be anything like that like in the past. That won't happen. Won't happen anymore, God said. I tolerated it back then, but I'm not going to tolerate it now. You will not be able to do that. So then we, as we close the chapter, we have them preparing the sacrifice and the meals. Having revealed to Ezekiel the foregoing laws and ordinances of observing by Israel in the future, and that's what he's been doing right now, the man brought him through the entrance of the side gate. You remember we had an angel that was his guide and was explaining everything to Ezekiel and taking him through the... Well, we're back with him. He's back. He's back guiding Ezekiel back around. And everything. So we're back to that point. Some of the sacrifice offering was boiled. Another was baked or roasted in the oven. The part that were to be consumed by fire was offered on the altar. Different places was used in the preparation. The material furnished by the people was turned over to the prince or priest. And they boiled it. They had a lot of different places there that they could do this because they had a lot of material to do that. And they boil it or cook it or any way they wanted to do. I'm going to try to just jump ahead. So Ezekiel is conducting a tour of the temple, and that resumes now. And he is taken by the angel there into the priest's chambers, and which ran parallel to the temple, if you remember that. On the north and south side of it. This will probably be the last slide I get to go through, and we'll finish that in 47 Sunday. The angel next brought Ezekiel to the outer court. These small courts was equipped with boiling places. They had different stations where they could take care of the meat. The minister of the house, the Levites... The Levites boiled, and the people are sacrificing for them. They cooked it. This part of the sacrifice, the animal, was eaten by the worshiper, those who are worshiping, in a communal meal in the temple courtyard. And that was the Levites' responsibility of ministry and taking care of it and make sure it's cooked and turn it over. Okay, we're going to finish 46 Sunday morning, and we'll finish 47 Sunday morning, too. You don't think I can do that? You just come and see. Okay, thank you very much.